TMTM, everyone, welcome to another episode of the Left Curve podcast. We have Kipan, or as you call him, Thomas, from marketing industry today. And he's been a veteran who's been in the space in the trenches with us for the longest time. And he's been writing about several topics covering like marketing, brand strategy, and actually user adoption. So I think what's really interesting is that a lot of people in this industry kind of struggle with how to market their products, which is like one of the key factors that when it comes to user adoption is like key, how to get your messaging right. And Kipan has been like this big voice in the space who has been doing like a lot of great stuff on this front. So Kipan, super happy to have you here. I think like, let's just get started with like a brief introduction about you and let's just go from there.
Yeah, Blingo, really appreciate you having me. Fun to be on these and hope to share some insights, maybe wisdom, but this is called the Left Curve. So we'll probably go all over that curve in of itself, left and right and middle curve. So TPAN Online, Thomas IRL, my background is I spent about a decade in Web2 growth and marketing roles. So from larger companies, a mobile gaming company called Scopely that was acquired for about $5 billion by the Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund, I believe, a couple years ago, maybe 1 or 2 years ago, and led growth initiatives at Uber during their hypergrowth phase days a while ago. But that was sort of where I cut my teeth in those two roles within the growth world, and then shifted more towards smaller startups in health tech, fintech, entertainment tech, and edutech, leading growth and marketing teams. So that was also a great, really formative set of experiences before I jumped into the world of crypto, Web3, and the on-chain economy. So I really was first introduced in a more hands-on way to this space in January 2021, thanks to NBA Top Shot by Dapper Labs. I think if you really look back, there was a very large cohort of maybe tens to, even at its peak, hundreds of thousands of users, probably more likely real people than just random bot wallets and things like that, just because of the nature of NBA Top Shot and how it worked, that were sort of brought on chain onto the Flow blockchain. And I was one of them. And my own experience with crypto prior to that was the previous cycle from prior to 2021, where it was a little bit more just, hey, I have a little bit of disposable income. Let me diversify my investments. Crypto's going crazy. I don't really know, sort of don't really care about what it is and what it does. Let me just throw a little bit of money in there. And fortunately, I just held it despite the fact that it crashed and went through its respective cycle at the time. But that was my exposure until NBA Top Shot in January 2021. And as that experience and that cycle and all the frenzy sort of happened starting from there, I ventured more into the on-chain space, primarily on Ethereum with NFTs. And what I like to say with that was I swam upstream. So I got fascinated with the native Web3 communities related to NFTs. And as that flourished and got really exciting, I spent pretty much all my non-sleeping, all my non-working hours on Discord, OpenSea, Twitter, just looking at everything. And because of my background, I sort of personally had a strong conviction that these dots will eventually connect and will become the next iteration of everything that we do in our lives to a degree, whether it's much more explicit or whether it's sort of sitting in the background as a foundational layer towards powering some of the technologies that we use. And as I continue upstream, I explored DeFi more, explored infra more, and fortunately, someone from the Ethereum Foundation also reached out. And so I currently work there on leading growth related efforts for an internal accelerator or cross-functional team that helps different grantees and fellows from the Ethereum Foundation's related grant programs and fellowship programs to sort of help reach their next stage of their respective project, product, or work that they're doing that's received a grant from the EF. So very unique team, very sort of different mission and approach. As I'm non-technical, I don't have like a PhD in research or anything. So not your typical type of person in that regard, but helping think about some other aspects besides, getting the grant in of itself, other the technical aspects. At the end of the day, your project needs to get users, or many of them do. So how do you sort of do that? How do you grow in those regards? And one of the other, probably the main reason why I'm here today is also during this journey in April 2022, as I mentioned, spent so much time just online, on-chain, looking at NFTs and just the whole growing, burgeoning ecosystem. I figured, why not sort of share my experiences and share my insights, considering I believed at the time, and I still do, which is why I'm still writing, that there's an interesting opportunity in terms of creating content, long form written content, and having an angle from growth and marketing perspective, considering my experience prior to joining this industry. And there's just so much going on and so much being rewritten or written for that matter in regards to that growth playbook. So I still think that there's so many pages being written in that playbook. It's evolving rapidly. And I started Web3 with T-Pan and have been writing for about 2.5 years now about different interesting growth marketing and also culture oriented initiatives within this broader crypto and on-chain ecosystem. So it's been a lot of fun. I really only stumbled upon writing until I found a topic and space that I really wanted to write about. Have been thinking about it for several years prior to actually starting the blog, but really took a lot of different things to happen at that time. So it's been a ton of fun. I think yesterday I published number 338, if I recall correctly. So yeah. Been at it for a little while. So it takes 2.5 years to probably write that many. And my pieces are typically anywhere from about 1,000 words to the really long ones. The longest one I think was about 2,500, 2,700 words. So that's probably closer to 10 minutes to read. That's definitely much more rare. But the 1,000 words are probably like 5-minute reads. So I think your average, I'm only on Twitter or TikTok all day, like not the content's not for you. But my goal is to provide insights that you honestly can't find anywhere else. You might see a headline here or there. You might even see a short write-up or post about it. But I try to go deeper and focus a little bit more on the potential insights as it pertains to marketing, growth. And even, if it's not related to that, what are some other things that may be interesting to take home or put in your back pocket because it might pop up again. So pattern recognition, trend spotting, and also like how that could eventually, whatever that trend might be applied from a growth and marketing perspective. Or if it already is, how can it be turned into something that you can think about or maybe even apply on your side as that potentially becomes more strategy versus a growth hack or just a one-time tactic. So lots of things there. The space is it's addicting beyond just potentially making money or things like that. There really are sort of fundamental paradigms and primitives. That's a new word. This industry, I didn't even know what the hell that meant prior to joining this industry. But there really are a lot of primitives from a technical standpoint, from a growth standpoint, I think from an interaction or social standpoint, that are really starting to happen. I think they will really resonate into other parts of the world and society as that continues to evolve.
Absolutely. And I think just for our audience, we started this podcast with this same idea, right? That we wanted to have something which can actually bring those insights to the table. So like you said that you chose long form, because those kind of insights weren't available. We kind of started the Left Curve podcast as well, because we felt that when we were starting out, there was no non-jargony content resource available, which can, be treated as an education source where you can go and, learn about, let's say, Aguilera without the intersubjectivity, right? So I think that's the idea we started with. And just because before we go too deep into it, just a disclaimer that anything that we say here is not financial advice. We're just crypto enthusiasts. Please do your own research before making any investments. And yeah, allow me to explain to you how the podcast will flow. So think about it this way. We're talking about the main thing as bringing brands beyond the hype. So we're seeing this big narrative in the industry right now that, hey, there's this founder who's this super large figure on socials. He's built his own personal brand And we've also seen like a lot of marketeers follow that trend, right? So this building of personal brand and hype, even for the project and yourself, has been like this meta of the cycle, which seems to be rotating. So thinking about like different growth strategies, we've thought that you've been this person who has built this audience of yourself, and that too in a space which is long form. And that is the kind of content that people are shying away from. But at the same time, you found your niche and a lot of adoption in that sense. You have like core readers, and we've been reading like a lot of good insights from you. So this is what we wanted to talk about. So there are like two phases of the podcast. In the first phase, we'll go through some basic questions together. So just try to get like all the readers and listeners up to speed with like what we're talking about. And then we kind of dive deep into the second phase, where we try to understand that, okay, for someone who's starting out, how can he replicate something similar? So that's like the two phases. And we'll slowly ease into the first one with the idea that, okay, you decided that you're doing a lot of things on the growth side. You have your contributions at Ethereum Foundation. How did you decide like, okay, long form is the thing I need? Did you feel that, okay, it's not there at that time? What was the landscape like? Let's start with understanding that from you.
Yeah, definitely. And what you're saying, one is long form. I think the other piece is writing, right? Because you could do long form videos, you could do long form podcasts. Nowadays, podcasts are also sort of just combined with videos because you sort of get that multiplier effect in terms of the breadth of channels that you can sort of tackle. And if you're not anon, that's a big moat, at least in that medium, having video tacked on. So yeah, my home base, I like to say, or my home channel or medium is long form writing, right? And I was alluding to it earlier in the intro, but I sort of fell upon it from one, just finding a space that was beyond just an interest or a hobby. Understanding or falling into Web3, crypto, the on-chain economy has really become a passion. And now I'm full-time here in this industry. And that's probably one of the ultimate signs. And spend a lot of free time just like browsing stuff, doom scrolling Twitter, all that fun stuff. So I think one, in terms of being able to create content, you got to be passionate about it. And if you aren't, it doesn't mean you can't do it, but it's exponentially harder. That goes with anything in life. If you're not passionate about it, it's just going to be harder to do anything for that matter. So I think when it comes to creating content, one, there needs to be openness and passion around that. And that also applies to the channel. If you enjoy writing more, if it comes to you, and sometimes it's that gut vibe or feeling, if it comes to you more easily, then that's a signal versus maybe being on camera or something. Or if you enjoy being on camera, explaining things verbally versus sitting down in your thoughts and writing the thing, take note of that, right? So that helps you to sort of gut check that. It's almost like hiring someone to join your team, or like you're dating, right? Like once you have enough reps, or if you've had enough experience in life, you sort of know, regardless of whatever that thing you're going through is, of that gut feeling of something feels a little bit more right for you, whatever that might mean. Maybe you feel something in your stomach, maybe you can't stop thinking about it, whatever it is. So writing for me was something that actually started a long time ago. I've been journaling since just a personal journal, right? It's not public, it's stupid, honestly, pretty stupid stuff, like what's going on in my week. When I was really young, I'm like, oh, I'm mad at my mom because we didn't go to McDonald's today, right? Something like that. But I actually started when I was seven-ish years old, and have kept as a habit, whether through school, through other programs, to just personally keeping it up around on a weekly basis still to this day. So I think that muscle was really built up that helped encourage deep down to me that writing was going to be my medium, and I was looking for the right thing. So once I found that confluence, I was like, okay, this is really interesting. Let me consider writing about the Web3 space. And at that time, it was primarily more on the NFT side, all the interesting things and primitives and paradigms that were being created from that, and interactions and whatnot, and user behaviors. And then it turned into, okay, well, I really like explaining things. I really like pointing out things, because when I was doing my work in just Web2 tech, one of my favorite things in terms of work that I did a lot of things, but one of the favorite things for me was actually being able to unpackage certain concepts or reverse engineer certain things that were working or were not working and explain why to other people and other teams that were not growth people or marketing people, right? So whether it's product, customer experience, design, and explain what I'm doing, why, or what's working, what's not working, and why, or what's a new interesting concept that they might not understand and how it works. That's what got me fired up. So I started realizing, okay, there's something here. Let me just start writing a blog. And actually what happened that encouraged me to start writing the blog was I went on sabbatical. It was time to take a break. I was transitioning to exploring the space full time. Let me take a sabbatical. The only thing I wanted to do on day one of my sabbatical was actually just write. So I have no more excuse. I can start writing and creating content. And what I realized was the first day I did that, it was on a Friday. I still remember that. And I wrote and I was just fired up, just adrenaline, dopamine, just felt so good hitting publish. My Hello World post. And I didn't really care how many people read it or not, or how many people subscribed. By the way, I started in April 2022, which was 1 month before what Celsius and Terra Luna and all that. So the worst time to do anything, to like leave your job and just start. And then what, 6 months later, you had FTX. So like literally it was the worst year to like really just give up like your previous life and just go all in. And luckily that innocence and naivety actually helped in a way, right? And just the openness that like, hey, like let me just do this. I have no expectations. I have a couple of theses, but let's see what happens. So when I did that, and it was a Friday, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna write another. Let me write another tomorrow. But I held myself back. I was like, okay, you should just take weekends for yourself and just like start writing on Monday and see what happens on Monday if you sort of not go too crazy and see what happens. And so for the first 6 months, and I was on sabbatical, so it was much easier. I wrote 5 days a week, every weekday. And that's sort of what helped really build that muscle that I never had, right? So what does that mean from a content perspective for the listener or for other people is, one, lean into what is easier for you, right? I think there's this common practice when it comes to businesses and startups or just companies in general, where it's really hard to pinpoint product market fit, right? There's some best practices in terms of quantifying it or, you know, other things. But one of the best sayings, I think this was from Mark Andreessen. I forget what the post was. But basically, he said in a pretty renowned blog post from what, like 10, 15 years ago now, is that if you have product market fit, everything will just be easier. Customers will start flowing in. You'll start, you know, being written about without even trying to do any PR. Like everything's just 10x easier, like everything about the business, right? Externally, internally, people just want to join you and your company and your mission and all that stuff. You're having a good time. And if you don't, well, it's hard. It's uphill climb, right? And the same goes with content and like identifying what channels you're good at, what channels you enjoy, the format, the length, whatever, right? Everyone is good at content. You just need to find what it is. Just like everyone can find their calling, you just need to figure out what it is and maybe let some preconceived notions go and whatever. Right. So I strongly do believe that. It took me forever to do that. And deep down, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm a long form writer this whole time. Unfortunately, I missed the wave of like COVID 2020, 2021, where some newsletters from that era and cohort really blew up. But that's okay. And that's why I'm still writing, because that's sort of my home base. And then for founders and teams, that's what I recommend. But then when you think about it from a team standpoint or just a building your brand standpoint, okay, so if that can be applied to, let's say, a founder or CEO, you just need to find your channel, you just need to find the format and just do the thing, then that applies for the whole team too. And obviously a team consists of different types of people. So maybe you or a founder is good at short form writing or like quick off the cuff, just once or twice a week, you're just doing like a 500 word tweet storm, right? Or like long form posts. And people just like that because it's raw, it's good, it's real, it's coming from someone that's well-respected in the trenches building. But what about the other team members? Maybe someone's good at doing video long form as DevRel. Like let them do that. Give them the tools, give them the space. Let them do 10 in a row and see what happens, right? Maybe there's not a high view count, but for some reason or another, one reason or another, you could tell it's all developers that are watching it. Like, okay, 100 views from 100 developers or 100 views from 50 developers is probably 10x more valuable than 1,000 views from 10 developers, right? So there's a lot of things where quantifiably that can help, but at the same time, depending on the type of content, you need other signals. And that happened in my journey as I sort of built my subscriber list. from just writing. And I didn't have a particular goal of who my audience was, but it sort of organically built up and they self-identified. They're like, you know, this is really interesting. Can't find this anywhere else. Saw this actually previously, you know, a couple times from a friend sharing or someone else in the industry. But now I'm going to subscribe because I've seen it enough and I don't really like reading newsletters, but this one's a little different. And maybe it is and is. I'm not saying mine's different, right? Although I do like to think it is a little bit. I also like to have a lot more me's and things like that, because when you're talking about heavier topics, it's hard to really dive into it, right? But what I like to do is insert memes, maybe share a personal anecdote beforehand and mix it up, because that's what loosens people up. And it's sort of like a show or a movie. You need to set the stage a little bit. You need to make it intriguing, or just like doing an ad. You need a hook, right, to get people in. And it could be funny, it could be personal. And that's really, really important, especially if you're doing deeper topics, right? Because I can speak for myself. Sometimes when I read something from like gigabrains, whether it's VCs, whether it's just really well-respected folks in the space, it's just like, or here's what, Vitalik, right? That's just a little hard. As a non-technical person, if you're super technical and you're just like, dude, this is gold every time, which it is, you know, you could just dive right into it. But I sort of need to take a deep breath, whether it's physically or mentally or emotionally before I read it. Or sometimes I don't, I just read the comments on it, right? Or the commentary on it. So I just covered a lot. I'll stop there because I just went on one. But I do truly think that content is very, very important. I think no one would disagree, but I think how you go about it, how you identify it, from a founder level to a founding team level to even a team member level, how can you encourage that? How can you help people identify what they're good at or nudge them to just start doing that? And then once you get that sort of groundswell, especially from a team level, when it kind of comes into content, there's a lot of interesting things that you could do with the content. I obviously haven't covered repurposing yet. I haven't covered founding or team level accounts interacting with a brand or company level account. There's a lot of interesting things you can do, and I've covered that in the past too.
Absolutely. And I think just for your content, I think you talked about so many good stuff, but just the idea about the audience finding you. I think like I've been one of those people that came to your newsletter and I was like, okay, this seems very interesting. It's well-rounded. It feels personalized. It's like a story being told. So back when I was in school, there used to be this competition. It was called the storytelling competition. And you'd just pick one story and you'd narrate it, right? And it was not about novelty of the story. It's how you narrate it. And I think like, just the way you write it has been like something that stuck to me so well. I'm like, okay, this is like one of the best ones in the industry. And I'm a big fan of the work that you've been doing. So I would vouch for you in that sense. So I think like kudos for the good stuff that you've been doing. But I think so many other good points about like how everyone has their own, you know, unique aura in some sense, which can be used. So I think like even in our team, I know people who are like super good at reply buying. They'll just drop like those one-liner comments that would blow up on the internet. And we've like had several of those team members who kind of come in and, you know, they just get like the quirkiest comment out there. And they've been doing it for like some of the best brands in the industry right now. So I think like it's about finding your own calling. And something really good you said was what comes easy is the best. And I think I personally agree with that. But I think what I would love to understand from my own understanding of like how you do these things would be like, let's say for you to choose like what you want to write about, how does that process look? Like, how do you pick something that, okay, let me talk about this today? Would love to know that.
Yeah, I think for me, the process is somewhat different than other folks. Or if you're doing it for a client, obviously there's different considerations there. Or if you're doing it for a brand company or sort of like a project page, and that might require a little bit more curation, restraint, thoughtfulness, etc. But what's interesting is for me, it's more from a personal point of view, but ideally or hopefully more established, somewhat well-researched. I don't try to publish research papers or anything. I'm not trying to be a Harvard Business case study or trying to be Masari or Blockworks or anything, but somewhere in between, right? And I think that's there's a sweet spot there, which is also was part of my thesis or an emergent one as I started getting my streak going with realizing like, okay, long form writing is my thing. But there's a sweet spot of like just short one-off things or pointing things out to like, you know, curating headlines, which is amazing too. Several newsletters I always follow with that's more that style. But, and something that's not like 20 pages, there's something that could be like 3 pages worth, et cetera. So that's where I sort of fell in. In terms of the topics, I would say, again, one of the angles or one of my, I literally stated it on, you know, in a post a little while ago. I have it on my whiteboard right here, but it's provide insights that no one else is doing in this industry, or let's say at least publicly, right? And I think that has been a helpful guiding principle. And for me, in terms of the blog itself, because it's tied to me, the name is Web3 with TPM, right? It's not like crypto insights, where like the goal is to sell that off once it reaches 100,000 subscribers, right? It's tied to me and my name. So I think there's a different angle about that too, right? Just to keep in mind. So when it comes to that, and like, well, there's a little bit more of a North Star for me personally when it comes to that writing, which helps me to sustain the passion or interest and just continuing on. Because I'll tell you straight up, I will be the first to tell you, it's not easy. I can't tell you how many times, especially over the past like 6 months, like, just like, man, do I still want to do this? Like, do I still want to do this? I don't know. It's like, it's a little hard. That said, you know, just like a lot sideways chop, like it is wild that how the price of something or just the macro can really affect your mental and emotional game. And like, not gonna lie about that. Like, that definitely has an impact. So how do you manage all that to just really be a mental game of being consistent? But going back to the curation piece, like with that North Star, it's been helpful to identify for me a topic that maybe has been covered a teeny bit or maybe not at all, but having that angle, you know, again, from that growth and marketing side, which is part one of my other theses about like, okay, how can I keep this fresh? How can I keep this interesting? How can I build an audience around this? So that's one thing. Having that North Star. The second thing is if it isn't covered that much, there could be an interesting angle. So I want to sort of like play around with that when I think about brainstorming, like, hey, this is interesting. The reason it's not covered a lot because it has nothing to do with price, for example, right? Or it's marketing or growth. It's because it's not like a really well-known protocol or project. Okay, great. I don't care. My goal is insights, right? And I think that's what people really want. People don't necessarily want to know just like, okay, the biggest project in this space, I'm not going to try and name names because they're all great, but you know, is doing this. This is what it means. Well, what about the small ones? Because one of my takes that I've really realized from the NFT side of things, and now is happening with meme coins, is there's the saying that you know, you don't want to scraping the bottom of the barrel, right? And scraping the bottom of the barrel typically means like the crap is at the bottom because like it sinks to the bottom, the good stuff's at the top. So you don't want to drink whatever's at the bottom of the barrel. But I think in this space, because it's so young, that the bottom of the barrel, which typically means where the degens are, that's why people say the trenches are deep, right? And just all the crap that's just not necessarily the most wholesome to many people, especially if you're leading a large project or something, is actually where the nuggets are, right? It's like panning for gold. You don't pan for gold when you, like, just at the top of the river. You got to sift through a lot of rocks. You got to sift through pebbles. You got to sift through just literal crap, right? But within that, you might find a nugget. You might find some specs, right? And then it's your goal to put those specs together into something really interesting. And that's where the crap floats to the top. And eventually over time, if there's a new mechanic, if there's an interesting strategy that can be transformed into something more sustainable, if there's something that all the degens are gathering around for one reason or another, that's something to not ignore or scoff at, but rather actually lean into and actually at minimum observe and potentially even participate. And that's where you get the interesting stuff, right? In regards to really building a new primitive on top of some other interesting behaviors or things like that. So that's what I would suggest, right? So in terms of finding your channel, then it turns into finding your angle, right? What's the thing that not only like, okay, well, great. Being on video, I enjoy that. Okay, great. There's literally tens of thousands of people who are creating video content. What are you going to talk about? Are you just going to talk about price of Bitcoin? Are you going to talk about interesting things going on in marketing in Web3 and crypto? Okay, that's a little bit more narrow. There's a little less competition. Great. Okay, well, what's your angle related to that? Because you could talk about anything related you know, there's a million things you could talk about in marketing and crypto, Web3 and the on-chain economy, right? So that could also relate to voice or style. And for me, I like to add memes. I use a more of a personal voice. I sometimes swear. And I think that's nice because I let the insights and the topics sort of negate some of the, oh my gosh, this person swore, they must be unprofessional or something like that. Actually, I think that's a sign of some degree of confidence. Don't swear like a sailor, but actually just shows, hey, you're like, it's like a nice little kick, right? And it shows that you're comfortable. You don't care what other people reading might be like, oh my gosh, you swore. Oh my gosh, well, your kids aren't reading this. I mean, if they are, that's actually really cool because that means they're really into the space because my stuff isn't one-on-one. So I think there's things that you could strategically do for the voice, for the angle, and also just the passion, right? I can tell, and I'm fully self-aware, that when I'm talking here, this isn't manufactured. Like, I'm talking louder, my eyes are big, I'm using my body to emphasize certain points. It's because I'm genuinely passionate about content creation and finding what makes sense for you for content as an individual and as a project and a brand. On top of just talking about this industry, which I've spent several years in on full time. So I think all that to a large degree can't really be fake. And that's what makes people stand out. The insights, the angle, the passion, a lot of other factors, some intangible, some can be developed, and many sort of come from finding the right place in it.
And I think, like, every time you give so many good points, and I think, like, there's so many things I can cover with you. And I think the passion thing really sticks with me, because think about it this way, that anyone who's chasing like vanity metrics kind of has that, you can always sense that, okay, it has like slightly this skewed narrative placed into it, right? So anyone who's trying to say that, okay, this is going to be this next 100x, it has that chilly kind of angle to it. And you kind of be like, okay, is it like psyops? Because I think, like, the more you stay in the industry, you kind of become like more skeptic. So it's almost refreshing for someone to just give it a stake instead of, you know, just shilling their own bags in some sense. So I think that's like super important. But I think, like, I'll kind of pivot totally to something different, right? So you said that you're working with this accelerator with Unisoft Foundation. And on top of that, I think what I would love to understand was, like, let's say there are like a lot of these founders who are coming out there, right? So what would be that one advice when it comes to, you know, consuming and writing content about their own brand? What would be that one advice to them from you?
Got it. So for projects that are beginning their journey, thinking about content creation, yes, things like that. I think one, and I'm sure for a good number of the founders here, this doesn't apply as much, but for some it may. So for me, when I was going on my starting my content journey, I think one, I never created any public content before, literally. Prior to the blog, again, April 2022, I only wrote one public post on Medium in, I think it was 2019, on Medium, and posted it on LinkedIn, and it went semi-viral, actually by all standards, considering how small of a follower account I was, which is not much, and LinkedIn being much smaller than it is today, it probably went more or less viral to a degree. And it was about me being laid off at the job because the startup shut down. And that was it. So like I mentioned, when there was that period of time where I was like, okay, I still want to write, because that sort of gave me a kick, because I knew that was sort of in me, but again, I didn't know the topic and all other stuff. Before I actually started writing, so I mentioned I started in January 2021 in this industry as a participant. I started the blog in April 2022. It actually took me over a year and three-ish months to really actually start the thing. Part of it was I was just focused on work full-time at the startup prior to leaving for sabbatical, other things. But I also felt like I just wanted to spend more time in this space just to observe, to interact, and really just identify patterns and just interact with the space. So I think for certain founders, certain founders, right, to be clear, depending on how much time you've spent in the industry or space, just don't force yourself to write content, or if it's easier, do it under the brand, right? Just build the muscle, but also take the time to just understand what content in this space is even like, or how people are using their voices and things like that. Be a student. Don't try to pretend to be a teacher or a practitioner when you haven't been there yet, right? And again, that is somewhat counter to like, just do the fucking thing,
right?
So I do think there is that balance, but depending on what you're trying to do, it's okay to take a little bit more time with certain types of intentions and goals, but take the time. And at the same time, once it's gone to a certain point, you got to just do the freaking thing, right? And start experimenting. Just publish something. Try one video or two videos, or do it under the project brand versus your own personal one. Or also, if you're building a team or if you have a project, which probably involves more than one person, see, like I said earlier, see where the strengths lie and things like that. So that's one piece of advice. I think the other thing is, don't be afraid to double down and ignore the other things. And this is common startup advice, or even on the growth side of things in that world. There's a million channels you can test, right? And this has always stuck with me for years prior to entering this space, when I was focusing more on paid budgets at one point and things like that. If something's working, just double down on it. Understand the system really well. And a lot of content creators, and that's why I talked about the home base channel, yes, repurposing is very strategically helpful and advantageous. But if something's working and you're getting a lot of traction, just double down on that, right? And also understand the industry in terms of product, channel, market fit. And with that, we know in this industry, X is, or Twitter is typically the primary channel. And then what does that solar system look like, or different channels? What are the ones that are complementary or supporting of X? So if you do video on X, well, you could easily repurpose that onto any other video platform. Obviously, one is YouTube. If it's podcast related, then you throw it on Spotify, you throw it on Apple Podcasts. And then if it's video, then you can also repurpose it shorter into things on Instagram and TikTok, depending if that's where potentially some of your audience lies, depending on the product and sort of the space that it's in. For many, not really worth the effort. But at the same time, it's relatively low effort if you're starting from long form video on X, right? Not to mention Telegram, Discord, all these other channels. So I think it's really important to think about, okay, starting from that home base channel, that comfort, taking the time to, okay, how do you build a repurposing engine? And then that solar system that's related to that, right? I think every piece of content, whether it takes more or less effort, there's more thoughtful, slightly more resource of intensive efforts to do so, which will probably yield a longer term, higher ROI, and also quicker, I wouldn't even say quick and dirty, but just quicker ways to repurpose that will be more efficient. There's a lot of different ways to sort of grow your audience across channels. And I do that from a written standpoint more so, but video can do the exact same thing. I think there's another concept of repurposing. So I actually presented this several days ago, which is nice. So it's pretty fresh. I think when you think about the concept of repurposing, there's actually two dimensions to it, or sort of two paths to it, and they can intersect, right? But they should be noted as distinct. And I don't think that's really talked about in terms of the concept of repurposing content, because I think people just do it, right? But they don't really think about the framework, or how do you sort of think about it strategically if you're scaling, or if you have limited resources, you have to make a decision, right? And I was already alluding to it with, you know, a couple minutes ago. So one is repurposing across channels. And I would define this, I think any type of repurposing is obviously across channels, but more specifically within one medium. Right. So for me, I do long form writing. Well, okay. So if I was to repurpose across channels, what's the easiest way to do it? Then I can do this on LinkedIn. I could do this on Discord. I could do this on Paragraph, which is an on chain version of Substack. I could do this on Medium. I could do this on Twitter. For example, what I do on Twitter is I don't properly repurpose it, and I should, but I'm just a stickler for formatting stuff. I just basically do like a tagline and take a couple screenshots, and then I add the link of the Substack. But I could just literally copy paste or do some refinement of that onto a long form post or a X article, right? So that's within a specific medium. It's still all written, right? I'm not doing any video stuff on top of the written piece. So that leads me to the second type of repurposing, which is repurposing across mediums, which also is inclusive of repurposing across different channels, but categorically, it's actually across mediums. And the best example of this is actually from video podcasts to other mediums and channels, because that is sort of, I don't think the right way is to say the least common denominator, but it is the type of content that, with everything that's possible in tools and platforms, is sort of the sort of apex, the apex format of content, which is also a reminder for me that maybe sooner than later, I probably should start a podcast. I'm not afraid to be on video. It's just, again, my home base is on text, a long form written. So what I mean by that is, once you have a video, like literally this piece of content that we're creating right now, you can turn that with different tools into text or transcription. You can put this on video formats or audio. You could turn off, or you could just put this on Spotify podcast without the video on, and then it's just a straight up podcast. But now Spotify supports video as well, so that's great. They're dual form. They're based on YouTube. And then you had all that written stuff that I mentioned. So really, that could be everything. And then you could cut this into little clips, right, that are more punchy, that could go on TikTok, can still go on X, right? So they have long form video X, you have short form video X, you drip that over time, if that makes sense, into 10 clips. Or if it's a really good guest, then 100 clips, right? Nothing wrong with that if you do it strategically. So I think that's a really important underappreciated concept of not only repurposing, which I think people do naturally because they understand that just as a form of muscle memory or just seeing other people do it, but repurposing with thoughtfulness about medium and channel.
Absolutely. And I think like repurposing is key. And what you said about like, you know, converting it into different channels, that's what we've been following as well. So this podcast will be available on like Apple Podcasts and then Spotify on with the video thing. Obviously, that's like the big new thing that's been coming up. But now that we've covered some of the basics, I think like we'd like to talk about something more like nuanced from a Web3 native region perspective. Like, what are some of the campaigns that you've been looking at, which kind of caught your attention as of late? Like a lot of it, things happening in the industry, and obviously you've been writing about it, but what's something that has been like more fresh and, you know, shiny to the new eyes?
Yeah, I think one that is very on top of mind, actually, I wrote about yesterday, and was a development and announcement yesterday. So, and we've seen examples of this before, and I do think it will sort of set the stage for a best practice for this vertical or this niche of products and projects. So what I'm getting at, or what I'm referencing, is yesterday there was a product within the Ethereum ecosystem called the DGEN1. It's spelled DGEN1, right? So clearly it's a play on DGENs and all that stuff. So no comment on that. That's fine. It is what it is. And it was developed by a team called, they're called Freedom Factory, but basically they developed the Ethereum OS, so operating system, for a mobile phone, which was actually launched, I believe, in late 2023 or maybe early this year. I'm not entirely sure because maybe timelines are messed up. But basically, they created a phone, which was actually, they didn't create the phone. It was an Android phone, but it was built on top of the Ethereum OS stack, right? So that's really cool because we're starting to see hardware with embedded wallets, with Web3 crypto native software. Solana has been doing that. Doge partnered with Jambo Phone for something on that front. Sui has a handheld gaming console that they're developing and creating, probably shipping sooner than later. Solana also has a sort of Nintendo Game Boy-esque, they call it PSG1. That is currently on pre-order sale as well. But what we're seeing is these hardware products. And yesterday, this team announced the pre-sale for the DGEN 1, right? And they have experience building the OS stack as well as putting that onto hardware devices. So they've done this before, is my point. So this is interesting because I hadn't really seen anything on the hardware side from the Ethereum ecosystem versus some other those products I mentioned. But what was more interesting as I was digging in And also knowing what has happened with some of these other hardware devices is, well, what are the incentives? Are you going to buy a $600 or $500 device and you just get to use some crypto native apps a little bit more easily? That's cool in of itself, just to be very clear. But I think in this type of environment and just the reality of the space, and it will change over time, or it will evolve over time, but people like incentives. Let's just be real. Are we going to get airdrops from it? Or is there something else going on? Is there some sort of bonus? Can I sell the NFT? Whatever. With this, and I say all this because I think the Solana Saga Genesis, so the first generation of the Solana mobile phone, really set a new precedent on incentive mechanics, incentive alignment, and what hardware can do in regards to creating mechanisms to help a product be sold. And what happened with the Solana, the Saga Genesis, is basically after purchase, because there's a soulbound token attached to the actual device, projects and meme coins and teams actually started airdropping to those tokens. And I believe for the Saga Genesis, there were only 2,000. So very exclusive group. Also, I forget exactly how much it costs. Let's say it costs $400, $500 US. That's not cheap. So basically what's going on is you have a scarce group of people, relatively unique. I'm saying relatively because there are definitely people who bought multiple, but I think distribution-wise, it was much closer to 101, one-to-one than, let's say, your average NFT project, where it could range anywhere from, let's say, 20% unique holder wallet holder account to, let's say, 50, 60 for the most well-grown communities. And that's to say wallets. That's not even individual people, right? So I think that's notable. And also the fact that they're able to spend this much disposable income or have the budget to spend $400, $500 on a device, let alone multiple they do, that means they're a higher quality user in terms of their wallet size or what they're able to purchase and things like that. And they're purchasing this, suggesting they're deeper into the ecosystem and they're probably a more of an on-chain user, more transactions, things like that. They care about the ecosystem, their well-researched, etc. So as a result, with these airdrops, the Solana Saga Genesis basically became an airdrop magnet, right? And I don't know if I created the term in terms of I'm the first person to say that, but I started using that term and I posted about it maybe, I forget, at least 6-9 months ago, because I thought it was really interesting. As a concept, right? This hardware device becoming this airdrop magnet. And in this piece and in my most recent one, which I referenced that original piece, basically there's these websites, and might be wrong. I believe it's like checkphone.xyz, but I'm not sure if that's the right URL. Basically, it tracks all the airdrops for the Saga Genesis, and they have a tracker for the second edition of the phone, which has been renamed to the Seeker. And there's already airdrops going to that, and it's in pre-sale. So everyone gets a soulbound pre-sale token. It hasn't shipped yet. It's coming next year sometime. And basically, they're getting airdrops. So the point here is these are becoming airdrop magnets because of the reasons I mentioned above. And these meme coin communities or these communities that are dropping tokens. And the reason why I say it's not just meme coin communities is because, at least with the Saga Genesis, Klaynosaurs, a pretty well-respected and up-and-coming NFT project in the Solana ecosystem, airdropped to the Saga Genesis holders a Genesis-specific collection of Klaynosaurs, right? And I think I checked this yesterday. The floor was 6 sol. So it's not, first of all, definitely not nothing. Second of all, it's well-respected. It's part of the Klaynosaurus sort of ecosystem and portfolio umbrella. So point there is lots of interesting things going on. And when there's hardware devices now, there's this notion that it could be this airdrop magnet. And also it's not only for hardware devices. All the higher, well-respected communities on the NFT side, I always like to point out Pudgy Penguins because they're much more established. They've been consistent over the years. They're airdrop magnets. you have a Pudgy Penguin or if you purchase one and hold one, well, that wallet has over the years, particularly over the past 12 to 18 months, been eligible and received airdrops worth a lot. Hey, and I've experienced that personally and seen that personally. And then there's other collections or tokens that are a version of that. If you stake a certain token, you're probably eligible, or for a period of time, you're eligible for other airdrops and things like that. So what's going on with the DGEN 1 is a similar version of that, or the notion or assumption or speculation that that will happen. What's interesting here is the Freedom Factory team has been much more explicit about it. And I write about this in yesterday's piece, where they, actually on their website, they share that there is an airdrop pool. And currently, as it stands, or at least when I checked it earlier this morning, every single holder, and I do believe this is based on token, not by wallet, will get about, at least at the time I saw, like $14 per token in airdrops back once it gets delivered to them, right? So that's really interesting, because basically you're having a dynamic rebate where you, before it's even launching, so this is similar to the Seeker, not the Saga Genesis, you're already having an idea of how much, quote unquote, these phones could be worth, or not even worth, but rather how much you could get back as an incentive or a rebate in a dynamic way of if you purchase one of these phones, or at least hold it until shipment. Because right now, these are basically pre-order tokens. They're not soulbound, so that's slightly different. You can just sell them if you want for some reason. And later on, I think once the sale window closes, it will get really interesting in terms of the secondary market. And if the market has changes, just on a broader sense, like Bitcoin reaches 150K, Ethereum reaches 10K, let's say, what happens for that? Right. So what's interesting also is on their homepage at the very bottom of the FAQs is, I mentioned the airdrop pool. The team actually has an FAQ of how do I airdrop, or how do I add to this airdrop pool? And they share their addresses, right? They share the addresses where communities can airdrop tokens to this airdrop pool. And they're incentivized because, again, similar to Saga Genesis, similar to just your standard distribution and growth strategy, if you're a meme coin or if you're some sort of project, is you want a larger holder count. Ideally, you want a holder base or a community that's more likely to, or has signals that show that they're likely to hold, they're likely to promote, they're sort of maybe higher or larger wallet amount, things like that, or maybe just even pure promotion, right? So what's going on there is, you're going to see a very interesting dynamic of this sort of, at least to a degree, and we'll see what happens to that degree, which I'll get to in a second, but this upwards spiral, basically this positive viral spiral loop. So what I mean by that is people initially are interested in the device just for the device. And I would say, I don't know if it's truly 80-20, where I'm just interested in trying out the product, haven't really seen one of these before. And then there's this financial incentive, but that's not the primary reason, let's say 80-20. But you're going to have those types of people. So that was me yesterday when it first came out. I'm like, let me just get one of these. I think it's really interesting. It's cool to test it out. I could probably write about it when it comes next year, et cetera. And then I see the airdrop side of things. Well, what's going to happen is basically then you're going to have speculators, hopefully still people who are interested in the product. But they're going to be like, hey, I might be able to make money on this. There's airdrop. So what costs 0.2 ETH, which is $500, $550, will cost less. We'll see how much. And then basically there's this public airdrop pool for growth or distribution purposes and promotional purposes, where different communities and projects are going to airdrop tokens to that wallet, which then changes the homepage, where the dollars per holder will increase, and then more people will buy the phone or pre-order the phone, and they'll get excited. And then the meme coin or product communities will start airdropping more stuff for distribution, and that becomes a positive flywheel loop. What actually will become a check and balance here, just due to game theory and just, I was about to say economics, which is not correct, but let's just say supply and demand. Definitely not that smart. I'm not this economist. Is that you're going to find some equilibrium, because if the airdrop amount per holder reaches, let's say, $1,000 per token, well, that's plus EV. So then there's going to be a whole bunch of arbitragers that are just going to order the just the phone, right? But there are some caveats and caps here. So don't quote me on this, but from various places I've heard that there's a 50,000 maximum device cap, which makes sense. They're not just going to keep producing based on demand. These are physical devices. There's manufacturing lead time. This is the first of its kind. So they don't want to sell a million and it for some reason, some of them are buggy and people hate it, right? That's not good for them long term. 50K cap. And secondly, at least as of today, all the airdrops for that airdrop pool are all for meme coins. Some a little bit more established than others, but they're all for meme coins. So they could all go to zero. So then the airdrop pool value goes to zero or trends closer to zero. Or maybe they moon because just everything's pumping, right? So then maybe that $14 just from the airdrops alone right now, and that's it, maybe goes to $140 just because, you know, because of the market or one coin, you know, grows substantially. So basically you have this sort of, it's sort of fascinating because, and this is a new thought, right? So this is live here, but basically this is a meme coin portfolio within the Base ecosystem. And I forget, but there's also the Arbitrum address, which may be just the same address because they're layer twos with an EVM. And I think there's a mainnet one, but either way, if it's an EVM address, any EVM token can be airdropped and NFTs can be airdropped, right? It's not just meme coins, although that's more easily distributable, right? So if it's an NFT project, well, you have to, you know, see how many holders there are or whatever. And that's just at the pre-order phase. So hypothetically, even after all these DGen ones are shipped, there is going to be, there could be more airdrops at a future point because of that signal, because this is a very unique cohort of users, right? It's really hard these days to, I mean, there are a lot better tools today than in the past, plenty of great names and companies. But, you know, still segmenting and cohorting is hard. And you have to sort of play around to figure out how do you identify these cohorts of value users, certain types of users, whatever. There will be one, I guarantee you, if there isn't already. There's going to be one for hardware devices, right? Because that is a completely different type of indicator than just pure on-chain signals. So keep that in mind. It might take some time, but I do think that'll be a very, very interesting set of segments and cohorts. And the whole point here is, and this is why I write long form, because I get to the point eventually, but the reason I give so much context is because, like, really breaking down what's going on is really important and helpful.
Exactly.
Because if this does become a thing, you understand what took it to its point from A to Z. So again, not Harvard Business School case study, not as dry. You hear someone like crazy like T-Pan talking about it. It's like, this guy's full of shit. And then a year later, you're like, wow, all these hardware devices, all these airdrops, everyone's going crazy. This actually works for growth. And you're like, oh yeah, this T-Pan guy just maybe was a little early. He's not completely full of shit, only a little bit, right? So the point here is, I do think there is a new airdrop magnet strategy here that's sort of multiple sides, because I already mentioned the Saga Genesis from over a year ago, right? Or just about a year ago, a little less than a year ago, is an established sort of airdrop magnet. So hardware devices are airdrop magnets. What's changing is on the other side, and I already mentioned this with the Freedom Factory team putting this on the website and stuff, is they're being explicit about these devices being airdrop magnets. So they're encouraging during the pre-sale phase, maybe even afterwards, for communities to actually incentivize, right? To build that positive viral upwards loop. And that's a new dynamic. So it's not only something that's already been tested, but what's being experimented now is the explicitness of saying, hey, here's an airdrop pool. Let's publicly share and provide the visualization to anyone that's thinking of buying this device, you know, how much you would be getting right now. And as I mentioned, there's already a lot of game theory involved with all the different factors I mentioned. This could go to moon, this could go to zero. And just because you know at the point of pre-sale how much it is today, again, there's a known unknown of future airdrops, future projects that will partner with DGen 1 or maybe DGen 02, right? That you don't know about. So regardless of the certainty of today, it's actually quite uncertain because of everything I mentioned. So I think that's going to change some of the airdrop game. That's going to change some of the incentive game. This is something where hardware devices, like, can you imagine Apple? I mean, I take that back. So, for example, Apple selling a new phone. Well, what are their incentive programs? They have the, what is it? I don't know what it's called, but you could basically be on a subscription plan every year to get the newest iPhone, right? You can, you can trade in your old phone and get like anywhere from, let's say, $100 to $300 credit, whatever. I'm making numbers up or something like that. It used to be the carriers had incentives too, right? They have credit card programs where like you could get 1 point equals 1 cent plus a 25% multiplier, right? So you get a slight discount from a point standpoint. This is basically permissionless airdropping, right? Airdropping is permissionless in of itself, but it's permissionless in the way where, you know, any community can join this pool and benefit from it, right? It's a win-win-win for the consumer, for the team building this phone, and also for those communities. So I do think this is something to watch, anything on the physical side. And there's going to be this new cohort and segment of users that's going to be very interesting and unique. It will probably get really weird, whether it's like more bots or just people are going to start buying 10 at a time or something. But I don't think it's at that point of saturation yet, which then can be combated with proof of humanity or other stuff if that team wants to do that. So I think it's something to watch. And I still think it's quite relatively early for the time being.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think like we've been working this project, which was like primarily trying to build this social pool, which will be like a mixer for like meme coins. And I think this is what you described with like a physical product attached to it where you can, you know, hold this phone or like device, so on and so forth, and get like access to this larger social pool of tokens, which acts like a mixer and the whole community can benefit from it. So I think like this has been one of the crazy ideas, and I think like a lot of good stuff on the game theory side, and I actually agree with you. And very interesting, personally very bullish on the base ecosystem, but if we're talking about, you know, these hardware devices, I have to, you know, give a shout out to Puff Pop from Bear Team, because like this weird precaution thing has to be
undefeated. I think it's very, very interesting. I haven't done deep research, but it doesn't matter, social media and stuff, reading about it. I mean, it seems like pretty established team or experienced team. Bearchain is Bearchain, and they're killing it from like community and culture side. And they have their own different thesis of proof of liquidity and stuff. So super interesting. Again, it's a physical device, right? So that's just a whole new blue ocean of the ways you can interact. Like, I'm making this up, so sounds like you're probably a little more familiar than me, and I'm making this up, but maybe it's even a thing. What if you add NFC onto a Puff Paw? And what if you start doing interesting things, Puff Paw to Puff Paw, Puff Paw to a phone which has a wallet, right? Like, there's a whole new design space and interaction space that I don't think has. Maybe even Puff Paw, I'm sure they're really smart people, so I'm sure they thought about that, but the focus is building a good product and, you know, getting enough excitement. But like, I think the design space for the future iterations is going to be really interesting. Throwing out there, I'm pulling this out of my ass. So like, what if a Puff Paw could interact with other projects in interesting ways, right? Within the Bearchain ecosystem. And I'm sure they're already in talks and, you know, have explored that deeply. And maybe once it launches at scale, like it's already built in, right? So that Puff Paw, you know, Puff Paw is a physical device and Puff Paw is a community and product and like is actually a project, obviously, but that in itself can actually expand into an ecosystem relatively quickly. So it's weird, it's novel, it's sure something that a lot of people could get stupid and scoff at, understandably, but I think it's also at the same time underestimated in terms of what a physical device that is native to this space and has built-in capabilities that are intentionally easier, let's say, to integrate with other projects or protocols or APIs or whatever it is within this ecosystem is going to get very, very interesting.
And I think it's also about the fact that you take an existing idea, which is like of vaping, which has found PMF and kind of tie it together to something that's like more emerging. And this is like in no way me promoting smoking or anything. I don't even smoke at all. But I see, like, at least in Dubai, if you go out there, everyone is like carrying one weight, and it's like this good tool for like the overall industry. So I do think like physical or hardware devices are like this good step in terms of like the whole industry maturing in some sense that, okay, this is like the next leg of devices that will actually get you access to like a whole new crowd that will come into crypto, you know? Imagine just kept in your nearby supermarket and you're like, oh, wow, it's cool. It just looks good. And I'll just take one of them. And you got onboarded to Web3 and you're like, okay, it's like a crypto device now. So I think that's been like this the whole thing, because like, if you see like 2-3 days ago, we had this whole off the grid hype and The Forbes headline said, popular Epic Games project Off the Grid is actually a crypto game. So I think like we're at this age now that we've kind of abstracted some of the complexities where you had like that early age of, you know, account abstraction that, oh, don't use a wallet. You can just have like a crypto project which goes mm-hmm. with your email, right? And everything is like powered by crypto. At the same time, you don't come to know about it. I think that's like a good step in the right direction for mass adoption. And I think PuffPaw can be cool in that sense. And what you said with Degen 1, 2, and so on and so forth. I think like that is like a good wave. And I think I did see some aggressive presence of these hardware-based devices in Token 2049. And I'm assuming there'll be more at DEF CON. So very good point. I think like you pointed in the right direction. I think very underexplored. I think like people still say, oh, all this way to earn and like physical devices is still fluff. But we've seen how that whole, you know, the flywheel kind of activated sales for like the whole Solana ecosystem. I still remember like when Bonk came out, we had like this call with Solana team before this and actually Solana mobile team. And they were going with the second launch that, okay, we have some more devices. And then overnight we see like, okay, 48 hours, everything has sold out. So we are underestimating when two things combine, what kind of, you know, positive delta it can create, right? So I think like super bullish on this. I think we're running out on time, but I'll, you know, switch to some of the ending questions of mine. So two questions for you. One being, as a budding marketeer who was starting out today, okay, let's say T-Pan, not from 2022, who was into NFTs, now more into meme coins, came in this super cycle. What does he write about and how does he build his own audience? What's that one advice for the marketeers of future that you'd like to give?
Yeah. for the record, definitely very interested in meme coins. I definitely have some, hold some, buy and sell some, but not like the thing about it, to be clear. And I know that's not your intention either, but just want to clear the air about it. Was just like, oh, this guy's like trying to be a Murad. Like, absolutely not. I never try to show anything with my content. It's more just pointing out interesting stuff. I may or may not have some, but like the goal is to inform and educate and provide insights, like more than anything else. I would like to say my track record is decent, but like in terms of calling things out, I'm not saying like I've made a million X or anything, not even close. But anyway, to answer your question regarding marketers that are thinking about, okay, how can I create content, what's interesting, I would just go back to what interests you the most, right, in the space. And if I'm assuming you're a marketer, let's make the assumptions you're on the marketing growth side, non-technical in the Web3 crypto industry. Let's assume you want to create content, because if you don't, well, don't do it, right? Let's be clear. And there's a difference between just wanting it or it'd be nice versus wanting it and you have started the journey, meaning you're starting to put out content or you're being a little more active or you're buying equipment, right? Those are all signs of really being more serious than just, hey, it'd be nice. Let me just continue sitting on my couch watching TV or trading meme coins. Totally fine. So I think those are obvious prerequisites. And then also at a point where you're consuming a good amount of content, I do think that's a prerequisite. I'm not saying just, and also ideally a diverse set of content. So whether it's the types of mediums, so you're listening to podcasts or watching videos, you're scrolling through Twitter, Telegram, Discord, reading newsletters, long form, short form, etc. So you have a good sort of buffet of consumption across a variety of topics. So you have a good idea of what the landscape is like. I think that is important to a degree. Don't get like just caught consuming and then not, you know, putting anything out there if your goal is to create content though. So with that, with those assumptions, my suggestion or advice would be, and this goes to some of the themes we've been talking about through this conversation, like what speaks you to you the most? What are you most interested in? Which newsletters are you reading every single time it comes out? Is it a daily one or a weekly one? If it's a daily one, are you reading it every single day word for word? If it's a video and you're really interested in the topic, are you watching it at 1x speed versus 1.5x speed because you just want to focus on finishing watching the video? Do you rewatch the video? Those are things that are a little bit more interesting to you and may be signals that, okay, if you're interested in it, do you have any opinions on it? Do you have any ideas about it? Do you have an opinion that you aren't really seeing anywhere else in relation to this topic? If you were to share that opinion, how would you share it? Would you share it via video, via written? Do you have some novel ideas or maybe a little spicy, but you could back it up, right? Those types of questions help to tease and pull out what type of content you might really be interested in, not just like, oh, I like crypto. Okay, great. Then what, right? That's like literally hundreds of millions of people, arguably, or tens of millions of people. So really focus on niching down to start off at least. And that was sort of what I did unintentionally. I was a little more clueless. I just did the thing and I had certain ideas and wanted to see if it was true or false in terms of those hypotheses. And do that yourself. Like, okay, I notice that I'm organically and naturally gravitating towards a certain topic or a certain category in the broader space. Okay, great. I'm realizing I have certain opinions and like, I just think a lot about this and I'm writing it down, or like at work, I'm also focusing on this and, you know, it's being well received. Okay, that's another signal. Great. I realize that I don't mind being on video. Okay, great. I realize I'm on Twitter a lot. Okay, great. Well, Twitter is pushing video a lot. Crypto Twitter is huge. And the topic that you're interested in doesn't really talk about the topic you're interested in that much. Great. Create content that you're, you know, that hits all those things. Great. And I think the other thing is to set expectations. In this space, and this has been said a million times over, and I have to say it again as a content creator, just like to do my responsibility in this regard, but you have to be consistent and it's going to start small. And then if it's good, it'll grow, right? And there's different ways to tell if it's good or not. And sometimes it might suck for a long time. I always think of Jack Butcher's famous visual where it's basically this like exponential chart that goes like this, and there's two like there's this one line, you know, during this long period of just stagnation, or seems like it's barely growing 1% every day, or maybe like nothing every day, and it says this is pointless, and that's like two lines before it starts going exponential. That's what's like being a content creator every day, unless you're, I guess, Mr. Beast or something. But that's really what it is like. And so that's why the passion, the focus on just like putting good content on out there, not giving a shit about, you know, if you get 3 likes versus 30, at least for the first 10 times, maybe even first 100 times you do it, is what really matters. I can guarantee you, I saw a version of that myself in terms of my subscriber count, the DMs, like people I meet randomly at events and things. They're like, oh, you're T-Pan? Like, oh, I love your stuff. And I'm just like, oh. Or like when I gave a talk a few days ago to an accelerator program, the Octane Accelerator program, shout out to Michelle and Octane, they're great. All these people in the chat when I was presenting, they're like, oh my gosh, I love your newsletter. I'm like, dude, I didn't know that. Because the reason why I say that is because long form written content is not a place for conversations. I'll put it that way, right? Versus Twitter, very different. And that is a disadvantage, to be very clear. But that's just my home base. So I think setting those expectations properly is very key, and being willing to be just heads down, just do the thing every day, day in, day out. I think the last example I'll give is Beeple. Everyone is like, oh my gosh, Beeple had a $69 million sale. He had his everydays. You know, he's killing it. He is literally, I think generally people would agree, he's like probably top three. Most people would say he's like top three digital artists in the space, or at least top 10. But you know how many... He's been doing this for like, what, 15 plus years, right? He only really started to break into prominence thanks to certain shifts in society with like, you know, digital NFTs, digital art, whatever. But like it really was 2020, 2021. So that was what, at least over 10 years in. So that's what it takes if you want to get to that level. So you don't maybe need 10 years before you find success, but it could take years. Right. I'm only on year 2.5 and I hope I continue. Like, I don't even know. Like, just having that humility. And there have been times, even in the past few months, I'm just like, oh, fuck. Got to write again today? So it's very real. And you had to be ready for it. It's just like building, just in a slightly different way, it's content, but it's just like building your own project.
I think like my advice to you, just talking to you in this conversation, would be I would totally dig for a live stream of yours where you're, you know, just jotting down your thoughts out loud. And then the long form comes out, right? So I think I would totally dig that as a format, totally honest with you. But I think like...
Challenging something. No, I appreciate it. I've gotten many comments over the years, like, you need to do video. And, you know, hey, they hit you up just like to double check equipment or whatever. And understood. I hear you.
Absolutely. And just for the marketeers, I think two main points, right? Consistency is key. And just keep putting in the efforts without thinking that, okay, tomorrow I will get success or not, because the hockey stick growth eventually appears. You talked about this before as well. And I think like that's what everyone aims for. But at the end of the day, if you are being passionate and if you're having fun, everything just flows within you, right? And it's like part of your routine. And I think that's what kept all of us going who have been in the space building for like through the trenches, irrespective of like the whole portfolio sizes going up and down. We're here and we're happy. And we love the cycle going from like, oh, we're so gone. And we're like, we're so back. It's like every 2 weeks it keeps rotating.
That's the meme. We're so back. It's so over. Such a good meme.
Yeah. And it keeps on happening. Like even this particular time, I was like, okay, meme coins are ended now. I don't think it was like a great run. We all made money. But it kind of came back again with this Borada and everything happening in the ecosystem. So I think it happens all the time. But I think, okay, last question. We ask this to everyone, and we'd love to ask this to you. Who is that one Web3 chat that you'd want us to bring to the Left Curve podcast?
There's two that come to mind. I think one, he's been making rounds, so I still got to shout him out. He's obviously freaking awesome. Justin from Safari. I think he's on the top of everyone's list. Yeah, see, he's already done it. So let's see. I think someone that would be interesting, I have someone else, but she's at a different company. Oh, I know someone. Okay. And he doesn't go on podcasts, but he may be a competitor, so I don't know.
Okay. We're all friends here.
If you're cool with it. Simon from Myosin. I think Simon from Myosin is really cool.
Sounds good.
He's very, very smart person. He doesn't I don't think he really goes on podcasts, but I really think he is a very well experienced, smart person. I've worked with him before. So if you could get him on, I think he would bring a lot of valuable insights. Really do.
Absolutely. We have your word. We'd love to get him on board. And I think like there's this thing that we do before, you know, just wrapping up the conversation. So we try to think about like this whole conversation, what are the key takeaways? So I think I'll go first and then I'll let you take a jab at it. So I think four main key takeaways from my side. We talked about a lot of interesting things altogether, but I think like my favorites has been the following. First being, do what comes easy to you. Definitely something that I agree with, and I would love to, you know, say to anyone who's trying to do content of any type that, okay, whatever's easy helps you build like more momentum and gets you like the streak out there that's required. Second would be say insights that are not public or like fresh, refreshing takes that we say. So anything that's like not common, try to dig for information that is valuable to someone. And how can it be fresh, right? The third one would be repurposing, because that was a very interesting point that you raised, that how can we get like more and more channels, or how can we hit more channels? So whenever we're talking to any of the companies that we're working with, we try to talk to them that, hey, let's try to hit beyond geographics. Let's try to hit like every channel that we can go for. So it can be emerging new platforms, be it like Podcaster or something on Threads. X is definitely good. We try to play around with everything. And the last one would be like finding newer ways or like novel ways to distribute. So the thing that we talked about with like this whole hardware devices being like this next wave of onboarding tools for like the users, I think those would be my key takeaways. would love to get yours as well.
Yeah, I think those are all good. But I think one that I always enjoy and came up in this conversation, that would probably not be that topic that you mentioned, but I think it encapsulates the conversation that we've had pretty well, is scrape the bottom of the barrel, right? Again, the bottom of the barrel is typically a lot of shit, stuff that people don't want. And I think there's a lot of stuff that's arguably the bottom, quote unquote, bottom of the barrel in this industry. I think one example is meme coins. I think there's a lot of, it's become much more debatable in terms of the value and things like that. But generally, I think to the average person, especially non-crypto, like meme coins, that's worthless, that's stupid. I strongly believe the opposite. And I think there could be a lot of, I'm fully convinced there's going to be some very interesting stuff going on meme coins, not even today, but rather how that gets integrated into our world of like growth and marketing. And there's going to be much more interesting implementations. If you thought brands introducing NFTs was stupid, I guarantee you there will be at some point, okay, I won't guarantee because that just means 100% certainty, but I think there is a likelihood that some creative brands or the next up and coming hyper growth brand will do something interesting there. We've seen that with celebrities. There's pretty much only one celebrity left that, but the fact that there is one is the point, right? Iggy Azalea has a meme coin that she's literally building all of her businesses around. That is literally unfathomable even a year ago, not to mention like in January or something, right? So scrape the bottom of the barrel. You can laugh at it. You can think it's stupid, but lean into it because shit is getting stirred up from that barrel and you're going to see what's eventually going to wind up being something very interesting. And again, case in point, NFTs that literally didn't, I mean, again, outside of like the CryptoPunks and stuff like that, like wasn't a thing. And it's still developing today, but that was just literally considered stupid and still is considered stupid by like what, probably 95%, if not like 99% of the world's population. But give it another few years, it's going to be integrated into so many things that we do on a daily basis, because it's so much more than just a JPEG. And the JPEGs are amazing, don't get me wrong. I have plenty. Big and small. I think that's what I would suggest and is a takeaway for me, and really encourage you guys to sort of think on that lens. Really lean into everything, even if you think it's stupid. Like, appreciate it for what it is, because it wouldn't be surprised if it comes back.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing that we've learned the most from this cycle. Just believe in it and you'll see like newer trends emerge here and there. So scrape the bottom of the barrels. And yeah, I think this has been like a lovely conversation. Thank you, Thomas, for joining in. And if you guys love the show, please do give us a follow at TradeUpBlog, and my account as well, which is Blingo. And follow our guest, Deepan, both on his X account, and subscribe to his newsletter. Thank you, guys. Have a great day. Take care.
Thank you.